Hello and welcome to the Witness Podcast, history as told by the people who are there. I'm Frahana Haider and today I'm taking you back to the aftermath of Iran's disputed presidential elections in 2009, when millions of Iranians took to the streets to protest against the landslide victory of hardliner Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. A young woman, Neda Agha Sultan, was shot dead at a demonstration in Tehran, her death filmed on a mobile phone. She became an icon for Iran's reform movement. I've been speaking to Arash Hejazi, who tried to save Neda's life as she bled on the street.
She is still cherished. She was a symbol. She is a person who gave her life and raised the awareness about the situation in Iran. So people love her, they cherish her, they admire her, and they haven't forgotten her.
Arash Hejazi had trained as a doctor, but by 2009, he'd given up his medical career to concentrate on writing and publishing. At the elections of June 12, 2009, he'd voted for the reform candidate, Mir Hussein Mousavi. And when hardliner Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was declared the winner, he joined the increasing number of peaceful protesters taking to the streets of Iran's big cities. Then, on June 19th, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, came forward.
Everybody anticipated that he would step in and try to settle the situation. But on the Friday, the supreme leader came and basically threatened the whole nation and said, if you don't go home, the responsibility of what happens is on those people, those candidates who were encouraging people to protest.
I want everyone to stop what they have been doing. If they don't, they are responsible for the chaos they have created.
It was evident that people were not going home. And I was quite concerned because we knew after those threats by the supreme leader, we would see violence.
The following day, at his publishing company, Arash Hejazi waited anxiously to see what would happen next.
In the afternoon, we started hearing news that people were gathering in the streets. My younger, more impatient colleagues were anxious to go out and join. I tried to stop them, but I couldn't. So when they decided to go out, I said, okay, I'll join you. I wanted to be the grown-up person in the team and make sure they didn't do anything silly or somehow if I could protect them. So we went out. We didn't have to go far from our office and the protests were happening already there.
So on that day, you could feel the tension?
Yes, it was tense. There were lots of plainclothes militia walking around the people. There was the smell of tear gas in the air.
And how did you come across Neda?
Me and my colleagues were standing on the pavement watching the protests. Neda and a more senior person were standing next to us. That gentleman, we later found out, was her music teacher. She was standing there. She was chanting with the rest of the protesters. She wasn't part of the protest, but she wanted to join the protest. Her music teacher was insisting that she would stay away from it. Then they released tear gas among the public, and everybody started running in different directions. Me and my colleagues and also Neda and her music teacher, we started running in the same direction. And at that point, we heard a blast. Seconds later, we saw Neda just coughing and blood gushing out of her chest, and she fell to the ground. Obviously, we realized that she was shot, and that was the blast. So we ran to her. I thought, because of my medical background, I could help her. She was shot in the chest, and she was in a state of shock. I tried to stop the bleeding, and another person was trying to open up her airways, and we were hoping that we could get her into a car and get her to a hospital, but everything happened so fast, and my assessment was that the bullet had hit her aorta, so she bled out in less than a minute, really. When I realized that she was gone, I stood aside. The other people carried her into a car to take her to a hospital. But obviously, by the time she had arrived to the hospital, there was nothing they could have done.
Traumatized, Arash went back to his office with his colleagues. They also took along the man who'd filmed Neda's death on his mobile phone.
We were all in a state of shock. What we did after that was to take the video off his phone, and everybody posted it to whoever they knew outside Iran. Everybody was seriously angry at that injustice. It was really unjust what had happened to that woman, an unarmed woman standing on a side being targeted like that. Then later, when it was dark, I went to see my parents. Well, obviously, I didn't want my mother to see me in all those bloody clothes. So when my dad opened the door, I gave him a very quick brief. I took my shirt off, changed my shirt, and I went into the room and we put on the news. And at that point, as soon as I arrived at home, we put on the CNN and I saw myself and Neda on the CNN. It had gone already there.
Did you expect that footage to have the impact that it did?
No, not at all. All we did was to send it to a few people we knew outside Iran. Cruelty cannot be gone unnoticed. From the time we sent the video out, and by the time I got home, it was 3 hours. And it was already on every news channel in the world. And also the repercussions after that, it wasn't just a piece of news. Days after, we heard Obama talking about it.
Above all, we've seen courageous women stand up to the brutality and threats, and we've experienced the searing image of a woman bleeding to death on the streets. While this loss is raw and extraordinarily painful, we also know this: those who stand up for justice are always on the right side of history.
I was terrified because I knew my face was quite clear on that camera, and in Iran, as an author, I thought I could be recognized, therefore I was terrified.
Arash lay low for a few days, but soon realised he would have to leave Tehran.
As soon as I arrived in the UK, my mobile phone started ringing and the media were all over me. And I didn't talk to the press at that point. And when I saw that the Iranian government had been denying the whole incident, claiming that it was fake and staged, I got quite angry. And at that point, I felt the least I can do is to talk about it as a witness.
The so-called Green Movement protests continued in Iran despite the authorities' brutal suppression.
Opposition leaders in Iran have vowed to attend memorial ceremonies for those killed in recent protests about the disputed election.
Iranian police used tear gas and batons to disperse thousands of people who'd gathered to commemorate the death of a young woman who was caught up in the recent political protests.
Just look at the defiance. The policeman is beating him, but this demonstrator refuses to give in. So the police open fire.
The mass demonstrations and civil disobedience continued until February 2010, when the authorities arrested several Green Movement leaders and cracked down on a rally in support of the emerging Arab revolutions. So would Arash say those protests and Neda's death led to much change in Iran?
At the face value, if you look at it, people may think nothing changed. I don't believe so. I strongly believe that it made a huge difference. Firstly, up to then, the world was talking about the nuclear ambitions of Iran, and that was the whole. Any time you heard about Iran, it was about the nuclear program. That point was when the world realized that issue of human rights in Iran was as big of a problem or even a bigger problem. Also, it created an awareness to the world that not to take what the governments of these countries think at face value, and actually they are not representative of the real aspirations and thoughts of the Iranians. Also, Ahmadinejad continued for another 4 years, but then we had another reformist president elected. International tensions have been calmed down because of a more reform liberal government in place. Things have improved in Iran. It's not perfect, it's not what we wanted, but it has improved.
Arash Hejazi is an editorial director at the publishers John Wiley & Sons and now lives in the UK in Oxford, from where he was speaking to me, Farhana Haider, for this edition of the Witness podcast. And before you go, I wanted to tell you about another of our BBC World Service podcasts. It's called People Fixing the World, and it's all about brilliant ideas aimed at making the world a better place. The podcast finds the people who try to solve the world's problems and then investigates whether their projects actually work. Search for People Fixing the World on your podcast app or go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.